This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone, and there is no Beam today. He is still on vacation. However, we know there's plenty of stuff going on. The Euros are in full swing. We have also coming up Copa America starting up here this weekend. But we're going to kind of not talk about that a ton today. We'll wait till Beam gets back next week. We'll have a little bit more of a discussion about the Euros, which should be a little further along. And, of course, we'll get into all the discussion of Copa America and how Team USA is doing. Obviously, we know there was some discussion about Greg Berhalter's performance with Colombia. And then much better performance for the U.S. against Brazil. So we'll find out. Which team do you get to see when Copa America actually starts off this weekend? It's an exciting thought, and we'll surely talk about it more next week. However, this week we want to do is turn a little bit more to talking about the Crew. Obviously, you know, that's my wheelhouse. It's more of, you know, my favorite team, clearly. Beam's obviously a big fan as well. But I thought we don't do a lot of guests on the show. We should probably do that more often. But when one of us is out, I figured it might be a good idea to incorporate a guest. So today I thought let's reach out to the new Crew beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. She is Brianna McKay. Brianna, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. So the Crew have a very busy summer lined up here. We obviously know they had the Champions Cup, you know, run that kept them busy through the spring. Four games in 2 weeks. This is kind of how MLS has to structure it, right? To get all these games in.
Yeah, get all these games in, and then, like you said, work around. You have CONCACAF, Champions Cup in the spring, and then in the midst of summer, you get League Cup where they stop basically all play. So, yeah, this is how they have to structure it to make sure they fit all those games in.
So how does Wilfried Nancy so far, from what you've seen, you know, when going to practice, things like that, how do you feel like just in the spring and the summer, how his philosophy of dealing with this type of schedule congestion when they have that, how does he seem to approach that from what you've heard and what you've talked to him about?
Well, first of all, I do know he prefers the regular one match a week so he can work him harder in training. I know the players prefer having more games, actually, but the way he approaches a lot in the preseason, there was a lot of talk about just getting fitness, like their fitness, their just their conditioning ready and prepared for having these stretches, because they kind of went into the season being mentally prepared to be playing a bunch of Champions Cup games, and that's what ended up happening.
I feel like with this Champions run that they've been on, obviously winning MLS Cup and then starting off the season with defending that, but also the Champions Cup, I feel like they've had a lot of things kind of thrown at them. You think maybe in the summer with League's Cup coming up, maybe there's a chance to settle in, get a little bit more of a rhythm. And then you remember, oh, yes, the summer of transfers is upon us. And a lot of teams want a lot of these players who helped the Crew win a championship. We know Aiden Morris is on his way out. Do we know the final plan yet on, you know, is he going to get one more run at lower.com field? Is that what we are hearing?
There's nothing official. I'm under the impression that, yes, he should be getting one more match at least one more match at lower.com. I know he's a big player who's been at the age of 22. He's won 2 MLS Cups with the club. So I know he's an important player that they'll likely want to do something for before he leaves.
Well, and the thoughts have come to, you know, replacements for him. And I feel like at least one of those candidates for replacing Aiden Morris, which is easier said than done, is Sean Zawadzki, right? I mean, they have a lot of faith in what he can do.
It's funny with Sean Zawadzki is, like, you kind of forget with every other position he plays that he's naturally a center midfielder, but that's what he came in knowing what to do. And then obviously we've seen him at every position, and we always joke that he's going to be the fourth backup goalkeeper if anything happens, especially during this time where Silty's going to probably be in the Olympics. But yeah, he's a very viable option to put at center midfield, and we saw it against New York.
I'm thinking here with what you just said. So Patrick Schulte, obviously, he's got a lot of interest as well. He is going to be, it seems like, going to be a part of that Olympic buildup and part of that Olympic roster. I saw you had retweeted this, that Charles Baum from MLS had said that apparently someone with knowledge of the situation says he's being monitored by Manchester United, among others. We had heard Arsenal had some interest. He's on the radar of the biggest clubs in the world, right?
Yes, he's someone who's been in the top of like people's thoughts when we think of players from the crew who might be heading to Europe. He's and we've heard about the interest from Arsenal. We've heard about interest from other teams. I don't think anything's like close to getting done. There's been nothing official of a deal or anything, but I know there's a lot of interest in him. It's interesting to see if it's going to happen this transfer window, or they're going to give him a little more time in, because he's still only 23 years old. So give him a little more time in his second season in MLS.
So we talked about some players that may be on the move out. And I mean, there could be others too. Obviously, you know the talent level that's there. But on the flip side of that, you have some players coming in. So Dylan Shambo from France coming in, he's someone who's helped his team get promotion. What do we think so far from what you're hearing from what the team has said, kind of what their interest level in him was, why they went out and got him?
I know Wilfred's really excited about Dylan, not just because he's French, but because he's been wanting a left-footed midfielder, and that's something that Tabouth brings to the team. So that's a big reason why they were looking at him and wanted to bring him in.
From what you've seen so far, I know it's early on, but what do you know of Issa Tall and kind of the structure that he wants to bring here to Columbus?
I know he has a really, really strong working relationship with Wilfred, and I know they work together really well. That's something I've heard a lot about. They kind of say their mindsets are so similar coming up through the French soccer system. It's kind of why we saw Issa Tall decide to part ways with Corey Ray, because the way the French soccer system works is, you know, really they focus more on homegrown than bringing like crew to bringing developmental players in later in their development. So that's kind of why they didn't need a crew two manager anymore, a general manager anymore. But yeah, I know, like I said, very good working relationship with him. I know there's a lot of trust too within the organization because he worked with Tim for so long. And I think it's going to be interesting because I feel like we're going to see Wilfred's hand in a lot of these moves now because they work so well together.
Well, that's interesting. So on the Corey Ray situation, which, yeah, he was GM for Crew 2. So you're saying, I hadn't heard that. That's very interesting that basically that the way that the French system works, they look at more, let's grow the player from, you know, 14, 15, 16, mm-hmm. when we get him in the academy, that kind of thing, as opposed to let's go out and sign like a younger, like a maybe a 18, 19-year-old who can be developed into a first teamer. That's more of what Crew 2 was doing. They want to bring guys from 14, 15, 16 into Crew 2. Is that more what you're saying, kind of the difference between what Issa feels like and what Corey Ray was kind of doing?
Yeah, that's what Issa said. He wants to start as young. Like he knows it's very very pushy like theory, but he wants to start as young as like 15, having these kids develop within the Crew system and bringing them into Crew 2 around like 16, 17 and having them be built in their organization.
I always think it's interesting being the Crew beat writer because we have a lot of people who cover Ohio State. Clearly you work with some of whom have previously covered, like Adam Jardy previously covered the Crew, but they're covering like the developmental side in a way of the NFL because that's mm-hmm. kind of what Ohio State ends up being, or in the NBA for basketball on Adam's side of things. But when you're covering the Crew, you're covering basically the high school, the college, and the pro version of all of that, except it's all in the academy system. When you have to like focus on all that, I know it's tough to keep all that straight, but how do you manage kind of knowing what to follow when you hear about, oh, the Crew, I don't know, U16s won a tournament or whatever. Like, how do you determine what part of that to give coverage to versus like, say, what's going on with the first team?
I think obviously the coverage on Dispatch always goes towards the first team and covering that. But I think it's important for me as a beat writer to keep an eye on all those things. And obviously if they're doing really well, if there's a standout player within in the developmental camp or even Crew 2, you pay attention to it. There's been coverage on Crew 2 the last 2 years because they went to the MLS Next Cup Championship. So it's been kind of an easy reason to cover them. But it's just keeping that focus. It's interesting this season because they're not as good as they've been, I guess, like record-wise, Crew 2. as they were in the last two seasons, but a big part of that has been there's been a lot of turnover, and this is a brand new batch of kids, so they kind of expected that.
We're on the phone with Brianna McKay from the Columbus Dispatch, who covers the Crew. Crew play, if you're listening to this on Wednesday night against Inter Miami. But let's switch gears to talk about the busyness off the field with all the, you know, different transactions. So midfielder Aziel Jackson comes in from St. Louis City via a trade of general allocation money, $650,000 in GAM. GAM is one of our favorite topics on this show because Beam and I both struggle to understand it. We mostly understand it, that there's money involved. It's allocated. MLS has rules that sometimes make no sense. But in the meantime, they're getting a player in return for this money who obviously seems to have some potential that Wilfried Nancy likes, correct?
He's another young player who's under a homegrown contract until this season is technically end, but there's a club option.
You get a sense that there might be other moves happening too. Seeing a lot of midfielders being brought in, Wilfried Nancy isn't planning on playing just an entire team of midfielders, right? Like at some point, there may be some roster moves to correlate to that.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything official, but I don't think that's a crazy possibility. I think there's definitely players on that roster who draw interest. I haven't heard anything about it, but someone who might draw interest, Mo Farsi. He's definitely a player who's had a good start to the season. There's also, you always hear rumors, I heard, like, you see things, nothing confirmed by the team or anything, but you see things like Club America has interest in Diego Rossi or something like that. And obviously, that's just interest is very different than working on a deal, finalizing a deal, but there's definitely interest in a lot of these players on this team.
Yeah, and I find that that's always the toughest part to know, at least from the little bit of whatever you call our job that we do here. It's not really journalism, it's more commentary, but I always try to I struggle to figure out which of those should I actually pay attention to. It's, you never know what to believe, right? But you wonder how much of that is general actual interest, how much of that is positioning by agents to get a better deal, and then how much of that is maybe a mix of the two, right? And so I wonder, how do you handle that when you're trying to, you know, figure that stuff out? I'm sure you have to lean on sources and everything else to try to get some better info, but it's got to be tough to know what part of that stuff to follow up on, right?
I think it's a lot of relying on sources and relying on other reliable journalists to see what they are kind of looking at as well. Because if it's from just one, like, fan account, who knows who tweeted it? But then also, sometimes they happen to be right. They also, those fan accounts sometimes have correct info. But then also, it's like, if there's other journalists who are covering it or it's getting more and more traction, that's, I feel like those are the ones you kind of pay more attention to than, like I said, rather than just one tweet you might see.
So let's talk a little bit about you. I know you've covered the Crew here now. Is this your second season covering the team, am I right?
I mean, we can count last season. I covered 3 playoff games.
Okay.
Started with Orlando. There was a joke running around. The Crew were undefeated when I took over the beat for quite a while.
There you go. Yeah, that's, well, see, there you go. Yeah, you had the record, I think. You can wave that in everybody else's face, I'm surely. But so tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into journalism.
Oh, I graduated from college in 2023 at Rowan University. It's in South New Jersey. I'm a Jersey girl at heart. But so I was a sports editor there. I've always wanted to be a sports journalist. I've known since high school. I did sports journalism in high school and college. I was a sports editor for 3 years. I worked a little part-time at the New York Yankees magazine, writing some like minor league features for them. I wrote some stuff for the Philadelphia Inquirer freelance. I've always been trying to break out into sports journalism, and this is my first real stable job in the industry.
That's great. No, I'm always fascinated to know, like, we obviously read the work. We hear what you guys, you know, tell us from the official side of things when you're writing these pieces, but like, personally, when you were growing up, were there sports experiences you had that got you interested in doing this? Or if so, what were some of those things that kind of spurred you on to want to go into sports journalism versus some other type of journalism?
I always looked around. I always loved sports growing up, but just never had the athletic ability. But I had all the sports
same for what it's worth. I totally relate to that. So,
but I had all this knowledge on sports, and I didn't know what to do with it because I couldn't play. So I'm like, why don't I write about it? But even, like, I've always been someone who liked to ask a lot of questions as well. I cover, obviously, Ohio State women's basketball, too, for Dispatch. And I joke around my first experience as a journalist was back at Rutgers. I went to a basketball camp when I was like around the age of 7, and C. Vivian Stringer, Hall of Fame coach, she was doing a question and answer, and all of them were asking like kind of basic questions, and I raised my hand, one of the youngest girls. I'm like, I went to a game earlier that year where Rutgers lost to Tennessee after leading at halftime by 25 points. So I decided to ask her, how did you lose that game by 25 points? So that's how I kind of knew I always wanted to be kind of sports journalist.
Ask the tough questions. You may get the good reaction, mm-hmm. right? You started early on that. That's awesome.
She was amazing. She brought me up and gave me a hug and said, I don't know how we did that. It was she was amazing about it. But that's how I kind of joked. That's how I knew I wanted to be a sports journalist.
Oh, that's very cool. Awesome. Well, we're glad that you're here covering the team, and we're glad that you're doing a great job with that. So I guess last thing I would say is what have you learned about in your time here covering the team compared to maybe some of the other stuff you've covered? What have you learned that makes maybe Crew fans a little bit different than some of the other fan bases that you've dealt with or talked to?
I think their dedication. I think I really saw it on display when I went to Pachuca, and there was a whole crowd of a whole section of Crew fans. It's just being willing to make that trip. I don't think there's many other fan bases who are willing to travel thousands of miles to watch their team play. And I think there's so much dedication in there. They're so passionate about it, and they just want to know more about the team and want to read more and just want to watch them succeed. They are a very passionate group.
Brianna, thanks for being a good sport, and really appreciate you taking the time. Best of luck covering the Crew going forward, and thanks for all the coverage you're providing.
Thank you so much. Look forward to talking to you soon.
There you go, Brianna McKay. We will surely talk to her again in the future. That's it for this shortened episode this week. Hope you enjoyed it. And Beam and I will be back in full next week to talk about Copa America, Euros, and of course, how the Crew do in their MLS action. Take care until then, and thanks for listening.